The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good evening, everyone. Am I loud enough for you all to hear? Great. And there are more seats in this inner hall. Those of you who are way in the back, you are kind of far away, so you're welcome to find your way in. So on Saturday, I drove into San Francisco, and I had an event happen that was pretty ordinary, pretty mundane, but I think it's a nice starting point for talking about the role that thinking has in our lives, or the role that thinking can have. So I was going to a part of San Francisco I'd never been to before. So I was going on streets that I had never seen before. And in the time since I had lived in San Francisco, which was more than 20 years ago now since I lived there, traffic has increased. So I was following the route, made a turn, supposed to make another turn into this small street, and kind of tucked away part of San Francisco. And there was all this traffic. All these cars. It took a while for me even to get into the street. And once I was into the street, it was like, go, stop, go, stop. And then I noticed my mind. And I noticed that I was having thoughts like, this is a drag. You know, there shouldn't be so much traffic here. This is making my life difficult. Will I get to where I need to go? Get to where I need to go on time? This is, you know, kind of uncomfortable, these kinds of thoughts. And then I noticed that when I had those thoughts, that my mind, my head, my brain, something got contracted and tight and felt heavy. And that heaviness kind of seemed to seep down from my head down to my shoulders and to my torso, and that kind of probably affected my posture a little bit and things. So I thought that was interesting to see the effect that having certain thoughts had on my body, and that the effect was not desirable. So then I thought, I was curious, what happened if I had different kinds of thoughts? So then I thought to myself, you know, Gil, you've never seen this part of San Francisco. People come from all over the world to see San Francisco. And the fact that we're going so slow is giving me a chance to look around and look at this nice buildings and what was going on. And so I started doing that. And I noticed that the contraction and heaviness and tightness stopped, lifted. And what was replaced was like the lights had been turned on inside. Just around traffic. Very ordinary. But it was a very, very ordinary, but I think a very important kind of insight that we all hopefully can have access to or can develop access to, which is to notice the effect that our thinking has on our physical system, on us, on our mood, and all kinds of things. And that's independent of whether or not the thoughts are justified. I might have been completely right to think about there's too many cars on the road, there's too much traffic on the road, they built the roads too narrow in San Francisco. Someone was supposed to fix it and move those buildings apart so we can get wider roads. I might have, you know, it's completely appropriate thoughts. But even if those thoughts were right, the way that I related to those thoughts, the way that I latched onto them, had a deleterious effect on my system. So what is better to do? Is it better to continue thinking in that way and kind of arrive at where I was going with a headache? Or is it better to stop thinking that way, or even better, reframe the whole situation. So the way that I think about it is kind of lifts the mind, opens the mind, relaxes me, makes it more interesting to be there. Which is better? I mean, it's a rhetorical question. I guess you know the answer that I'm expecting. One of the first times I saw this was many years ago when I was in the monastery. And I got really sick. I had some kind of cold. But I had to keep working. I was doing my work. I was so weak and so sick that I saw that I couldn't afford to think thoughts that drained my energy more. I only had space to think thoughts that kind of kept the energy kind of going enough just to survive. I didn't have the luxury to think, oh, poor Gil, I'm so sick. Oh, shouldn't someone take care of me? Shouldn't someone notice that I'm sick and do my job for me? Maybe those were appropriate thoughts. You know, yes, someone should have noticed I was sick. Yes, someone should have said something. Yes, someone should have taken care of me, maybe. But the way that I was relating to those thoughts, I just couldn't afford it because it would drain my energy and I could see myself, feel myself getting sicker. Just the effect of thoughts, the kind of thoughts I had and how I related to it. I think when we're strong and vigorous, we have a lot of room to have a wide range of thoughts and keep our energy going well enough to keep going. But sometimes when people are really stressed out or really sick, they don't have the much luxury, they don't have much bandwidth to do anything that drains them even more. And some people who get sick learn that they have to be very attentive to their minds because it's very consequential what we think. I saw this another time some years later when my back went out and it was pretty bad. Sometimes I couldn't walk and sometimes I could walk just barely. And there also I noticed that what I thought had an effect on my back. It wasn't a big effect, but it was a small one. But I could feel my back, if I had certain kind of negative kind of thinking going on about it, I could feel the muscles in my back. I don't know if I felt the muscles tighten up, but I could feel myself hurting more. And if I didn't do those thoughts, a teeny bit, I could feel that particular level of pain release a little bit. And there also, because I had to do certain things, I had to walk some places, and I don't know what I did, but I couldn't just stay in bed, I learned that I had to be very attentive to my mind. I had to watch it, see it, look what direction my thoughts were going, and if the thoughts were going in a way that made my back pain worse, I had to lighten up, loosen up, because it was so consequential. And sometimes it's much, ordinary life, we have lots of energy, we're healthy, and sometimes something really big happens. And it's not just little traffic in San Francisco, but, some major issues are going on, major conflict with someone, major difficulty at work, major something. And so there also, the way we think about it can have an effect on us, independent of whether it's appropriate to have those thoughts or not, right to have those thoughts. And it can drain us, it can contract us, it can tighten us up, it brings stress into us. Because it's kind of like thoughts are often not innocent little public service announcements that simply float through, like a cloud in a sky, just they float through and, they don't really affect or touch anything and they just kind of... But often, sometimes our thoughts are connected to much of else going on in our body, in our mind, ourselves. And that connection is very interesting to study, to see. Because sometimes I think of thoughts, it's almost like, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but kind of like a puppeteer, or maybe the thoughts are the sticks that hold the strings to the puppet. And there's these strings coming down to our muscles in our body, and to our limbic system, and to various parts of our body, and to our emotional centers. And these strings begin pulling on these different parts of our system and having an effect. And one interesting place to see this is, in fact, in meditation. If in meditation you can get fairly relaxed and calm, sitting quietly, minding your own business, and things are good, calm and nice. And then something occurs. Maybe there's a sound outside, you hear some people speaking. The sound of that voice sounds like your sweetheart from high school who jilted you. And 40 years later, the anger is still there, you know. And you're just sitting there calmly, and you have this thought, oh, it's just like my sweetheart. That wasn't, you know, my bitter heart. You know, we were sweet once, but now we're bitter. And so we start thinking about, oh, he did, she did. And you could feel the energy, the heat rising, the, you know, the muscles contract, the brain begins spinning, the stories beginning to go out. How did that happen? The power of thoughts, the power of a memory, and we get spin off. Probably that sweetheart person from 40 years ago maybe doesn't even remember you. You know, and you're not going to see the person anymore. But that doesn't, you know, it can still have this powerful, you know, effect on our system. And it isn't just because of the thoughts, because it's the way that those thoughts are connected to many different things. Connected to our values, our beliefs, our hurt, connected to our emotional life, connected to our all kinds of history in our lives, connected to the way in which we latch on, or the ways in which we resist, the ways in which we get aroused by particular thoughts. Oh my God, I can't have that. Oh, that is terrible. Or, oh no, I've got to stop doing this. And we kind of get in a reactive mode. It started off with just a thought, just an idea, that memory that went through. And then to feel the effect is quite, I think, maybe humbling or edifying or both. It's quite something to see the effect. And the advantage of seeing the effect is that then you can kind of evaluate the thinking, not on the basis about what you're thinking, but about the consequence it has for you and the way in which you're relating to the thoughts. How are you relating to it? What's your relationship to it? Are you for it? Are you against it? Are you latched onto it? Are you holding onto it? Are you duking it out with it? Or are you just kind of stepping back and curious and open? Rather than feeling the weight of it and contracted of it, this is a drag to have this. You're a tourist in San Francisco. And wow, look, this is what a thought is like. A human being thinking. And look at this, the thoughts are having an effect on my body. This is interesting. Wow, I'll look around some more. It's a radically different thing for the mind to do. On one hand, to get involved with the thoughts and swept away in them, versus stepping back and getting curious and looking, what's going on here? What's this like? And we're shifting the power of attention, or the fuel of the food of attention, away from feeding our reactivity or feeding what's the effect has on us, and moving it towards something which in Buddhism is considered very healthy. And what's healthy is paying a non-reactive attention to what is happening. It shifts the inner ecology of the mind to be curious and look, what is this? And look. Even if what it's looking at is deleterious. Now, one of the reasons why the Buddha talked about this was important is indicated by this quote. Whatever a person frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of the mind. So whatever you're frequently ruminating about, repeatedly thinking over and over again, that becomes an inclination of the mind. It becomes a habit. So then it goes on. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of desire, then one's mind inclines to further thoughts of desire. It becomes a habit to have desire thoughts. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of ill will, then one's mind inclines to thoughts of ill will. And if one frequently ponders and reflects upon thoughts of cruelty, then one's mind inclines to thoughts of cruelty. So the more we think hatefully, or we think with hostility, with irritation, the more we kind of stay with thought patterns over and over again, it kind of like locks in the mind. It kind of locks, kind of becomes a habit, or kind of those ruts in the mind get kind of well oiled, and we go more and more, we tend to fall into those. It becomes a habit. So, you know, what habits of thoughts do you have which are not, that you'd rather not have creating habits for you? Maybe they already created habits. I think one very common one in America, from what I've been told by psychotherapists, are thoughts of anxiety, thoughts of fear and dread, thinking ahead and worrying of what's going on. And it might seem like you have very little choice about having those thoughts, but it's very important to realize that having those thoughts of anxiety and worrying about things can have a deep effect both on our physical system here and now, but also can create a habit of thinking more thoughts of anxiety. In that case, it kind of becomes a little bit like a self-fulfilling prophecy where we think anxious thoughts, it becomes a habit, and so we see more things to be anxious about more and more. And anxiety has particular kind of powerful authority because it can seem so important and so true and so like I have to take care of myself. And so it arouses a certain kind of, that's appropriate to be afraid. And then thoughts of ill will, of hostility. You know, you see people sometimes who hang out with other people who are hostile, and they're kind of talking hostility about people who are bad and what's going on wrong. And it creates a habit of doing more of that. It reinforces it. So what the Buddha was suggesting is it's important to be careful with the thoughts that you have. It's important to track what's going on in your mind and to begin looking at the effect that the thoughts have on you. If you want to create good habits, good inclinations of mind, you have to be careful what you choose to do. So if I had, in San Francisco on Saturday, had decided to just to complain the whole way there about the traffic, I remember come to see my friends who I was visiting, and I could have showed up at the event and the dinner and said, things are all wrong, and you know, and I kind of looked around the apartment, and you know, it's even the apartment's too small, and the light's not right, and the chair's not right, and you know, maybe I wouldn't have said anything because you know it's impolite. Because I'm kind of in that, you know, I'm you know, in the groove of complaining. Or maybe it's nicer to come with the habit of curiosity, of interest, and look around. Oh, how nice. What are you predisposing yourself towards? And this is not being Pollyannish or kind of trying to think, you know, saccharine thoughts about everything. But there is a range of healthy choice we can make. We can shift the frame of reference, shift how we focus on what we're doing in order to create better conditions. Now, what you're thinking about that's bad, what's wrong, as I said, it might be right. You might have very insightful analysis of situations. And in fact, the traffic is bad. And it shouldn't be this way. Maybe. So, great. Congratulate yourself for the great insight and to recognize that you've done a good job. And then don't think about it anymore. It's the rumination, the continuation, the going back and reviewing over and over and over again. It's like you didn't get the message. You know, get the message. You heard it. You had the thought. You recognized the situation. And then now that you got the message, move on and kind of either do something about it or improve the traffic in San Francisco or improve the quality of your mind, what goes on in your mind. So I emphasize this because the justification for rumination is not really there. But many of us ruminate. And it's this frequent rumination that creates a lot of tremendous trouble for our society and for individuals. Health problems that people have can come from constant rumination of things which drain them and make things worse. Heart conditions probably come a little bit from the stress of constant rumination of certain kinds of thoughts. A certain percentage of depression comes from constant rumination. A certain percentage of people who have obsessive compulsive disorder comes from constant rumination. And so what psychologists are finding is if you can teach people who have the illnesses of rumination, of constantly thinking the same kinds of deleterious thoughts over and over again, if you can teach them mindfulness or something like mindfulness, like cognitive behavioral therapy, that it kind of brings a different way of being with thoughts where we don't get swept away in them. We don't continue to think those thoughts. We put our attention in attention as opposed to losing our attention in the thinking. And it's proved to be very powerful in many circumstances with clinical studies of depression and obsessive compulsive disorder and things for people to start cultivating mindfulness of the situation. Doesn't work for everyone, but a high percentage of people, it seems to make a big difference. So this ability to kind of stop, pause, look, recognize what's going on in the mind is a very powerful, very useful thing to do. It's not easy to do, especially if the habit has been to just be riding, being carried away on rumination, carrying away in our thoughts, so that we're kind of blinded to the fact that we're even thinking. Or it's even kind of inconceivable that I don't think these thoughts. So it takes a while. And that's why meditation, where we kind of physically stop, can help. One of the things that can be very helpful when the thoughts are very powerful is what's called mental noting, where you very quietly in your mind tell yourself with one word what you're doing. I'm thinking, thinking, thinking. I'm thinking. Or planning, or anxiety thoughts, or memory thoughts. Just a simple word that recognizes it. Maybe once saying a mental note once doesn't make a big effect, but you do it repeatedly. And after a while, you begin to kind of step back or separate yourself from living in the thoughts, being the thoughts. And, you know, because we become the thoughts when we latch onto them, when we kind of get involved with them, when we get swept away in them. And there's a very strong identification that people get with their thinking. One of the remarkable steps is you step back and notice thinking, thinking, thinking. The thinking doesn't stop necessarily, but at some point you have a thought, and it's possible to see the thought as just a thought and not you. And we no longer identify the thought, meaning we no longer define ourselves by a thought. We no longer believe that I have to take up residency in the thoughts. It's just a thought. Just a thought. And this insight that it's just a thought that goes through can give you a tremendous power in your life, because then you can start choosing whether or not to continue with that thought, let go of the thought, or try to find some interesting strategy that's an alternative to the thinking. So back to the Buddha. This seems to have been an issue back 2,500 years ago as well. So the Buddha gave a variety of instructions of how to work with thinking. And there's one text where he gives five different approaches. And I think that things often in these ancient texts are sequential, so maybe it's like maybe what he thought was the easiest, and then if that didn't work, then do the next. If that didn't work, do the next. So the first is, if you recognize what you're thinking about, the theme of your thoughts, what you think, and recognize that it's not useful to have that thought, not helpful, not healthy, not useful. The first thing he recommends is think about something else. Think about a theme, think about a subject that is better to think about. I think I kind of a little bit, I'm a little bit predisposed, or my preference would be whatever it is that's going on in the present moment, think in a more positive way or more useful way in the present about it. But if you're thinking about something in the past, you know, my sweetheart from 40 years ago, who I don't even remember her name, you know, I'm kind of going down that resentful, you know, rut. You know, maybe I could think nice thoughts about the sweetheart. Or maybe I can just think about something else. You know, today's sweetheart. You know, just kind of change a subject. That sometimes can be very healthy and appropriate to do. I did that in San Francisco. Rather than thinking about what a drag the traffic is, I thought, I'm in San Francisco. This is interesting. Look around, Gil. Enjoy what's here. The second practice that the Buddha taught was to think about the disadvantages of what you're thinking. So there's one of the disadvantages. So one of them I've said already, if you think too much of this, becomes your habit. Another disadvantage is that it might be creating a burden, a stress on your psychophysical system to keep thinking this. And maybe you don't really want to afford the consequence of that stress. The other is that it might predispose you to see the circumstances in unhelpful ways. So that when you see your friend, you don't see your friend, you know, in open, receptive ways, but you see your friend with preconceived ideas that you've been mulling over for days and days. And that's not maybe so useful. So you start looking at the disadvantages of how you're thinking. And sometimes if you see the disadvantages strongly enough, then sometimes it's obvious we want to let go. A friend of mine was divorced, ugly divorce. And she'd been divorced for at least 7 years, maybe longer. Ended up being a single mom. Then life was kind of hard, I guess. And she just had a tremendous amount of anger to her ex for years. And then one day, she was in the shower, and it occurred to her that the only person who's suffering here in these thoughts is myself. My ex is off having a good time someplace, even though he shouldn't. it doesn't do me any good to be ruminating and thinking and rehearsing and repeating all this. And she saw it so clearly that she was able to finally put this down, the resentment. I don't know, I never met the person, the man, maybe he is a jerk. But even so, there's no need to linger and think about it and, you know, be weighed down by it. So this is an example of someone who took a long time to realize the disadvantages of thinking something, but when she saw clearly enough, she put it down. So that's a second technique, is to think about the disadvantages. The third is to ignore what you're thinking about. So it's not thinking about something different, but simply try to just not pay any attention to it. Maybe a little bit harder to do, but if you can't do the other ones, just don't pay attention to it. Kind of don't follow it. Don't keep thinking about it. Every time that you think about it, let go. Every time you think about it, turn away from it. Just don't give it any energy. And that's one of the things we do in meditation. You have a thought arises. You find yourself getting involved in thoughts. You let go of it and you come back to your breathing, for example. Start thinking, come back to your breath. You're kind of ignoring it, coming back. And one of the great instructions for ignoring it that I received early in my meditation career was the instruction about thinking was, don't be bothered by them. Don't let yourself be bothered by your thoughts. Because the thing is, when you get bothered by your thinking, oh, I shouldn't be thinking, this is bad, I let go and they keep coming back, all these terrible thoughts. If you're bothered by them, you're actually feeding them. You're actually supporting the very conditions that make you keep thinking that way. So if you can let yourself, don't be bothered by them, don't give them so much credit. It's very helpful to let the conditions of thinking quiet down. So your mind wanders off in thinking, and don't be bothered by it. Just, it's okay, that's what minds do. Come back to your breathing. And every time you come back to your breathing, you're taking some of the energy of thinking away and using it for something else. And drop by drop, the energy of your mind starts shifting from going into the thoughts and feeding it toward just being attentive. And slowly the force and power of thinking decreases and quiets down, drop by drop. And to learn the skill of letting go of thoughts is very, very helpful. It's not always easy to do. Some people, it takes a while to even learn how, they can't imagine, how do you let go of a thought? But this is, again, where I think where meditation is very helpful, where frequent meditation, if you keep doing it, after a while you'll see in easy situations with easy thoughts that you're actually able to stop thinking of them and bring yourself back to your breathing. And then when you start seeing that movement, then you can start to learn to do it with more and more difficult thoughts that you're really attached to. So anyway, this ignoring of them, letting go of them, coming back. Fourth way, maybe because I'm... Let's see, I forgot. Because I'm... The dynamics of public speaking sometimes. Oh, yes, this is one of my favorite ones. How could I forget? So it's stilling. The expression here is stilling the mental formations. So it's kind of technical language. Mental formations is the physical tension. I think of it as a physical tension that's in your system because of the way in which you're thinking. It's the energy that you're pouring into your thoughts. It's the energy of attachment and concern, or you have all this energy and tension that's connected to it. So not the content of the thoughts, but it has to do with how we relate to the thinking. And you can feel that sometimes in the muscles of your body. Or you can see it in other people sometimes. You know, they're really thinking hard and their eyebrows are all bunched up, you know, and their eyes get kind of narrow, sometimes their jaws are kind of grinding, or, you know, you can feel it sometimes in the belly gets tight, or the shoulders go up because we're thinking fearful thoughts. This is where these puppet strings kind of reach out into the muscles of our body. And so the idea is to feel the physical consequence, stress, tension, that comes with thinking, and then relax it. So rather than letting go of the thoughts, we're relaxing the physicality that comes along with intense thinking. I remember once I was at the UC Berkeley Library, and I really needed to have a book that was not on the shelves but was not checked out. And so, you know, maybe someone had returned it and it was still in the back room. And I was really adamant that the librarians go look for it. And I really had to, you know, make my case, you know, how important it was for me. And so finally the librarian said, okay, I'll go look. And then when the librarian left to go look for the book, only then did I notice that I was on my tippy toes leaning across the counter, you know, almost over, you know. You know, this is an example where thoughts and desires together can lead to, you know, tremendous amount of physical activity. And, you know, if the librarian had said first, relax, and then we'll talk about it. And then I would have noticed what was going on. I was leaning over the counter on my tippy toes, and I probably would have almost automatically just softened and relaxed. The thing about that softening and relaxing is very helpful in our thinking, because the more tension we have in our system, in our body, the more we're fueling our thoughts, the more the conditions are there to make our thinking more furious and more forceful, and the harder it is to let go of it. So the Buddha talked about stilling the mental formation, stilling the pressure, the tension, the tightness that comes with our thinking. And then the fifth strategy he gave is my least favorite. And I think this is meant for when things are really out of control. And you've done all the first four and they don't work. and things are really serious. And because you're about to punch out your boss. You know, if you keep thinking this way, you know, you're going to be in big time trouble and, you know, you can't afford to. So here, this is what it says. So when all these other ways haven't worked, then then with one's teeth clenched and one's tongue pressed against the roof of the mouth, one should beat down, constrain, and crush mind with mind. So you kind of rally the mind and kind of insist and say, can't do that, you stop that, you know, just really hard. So I hope that you never have to do that. But I think realistically, there are time to time in our life that sometimes we have to do that. I think people, some people have addictions. Not that I have addictions, but I've had very strong desires sometimes where they were kind of overwhelming. And I just had to kind of like bear down and just kind of, it didn't look pretty, you know, just like bear down, hold on to the saddle or hold on, you know, put on the seatbelt and don't give in, just, you know, and, you know, maybe clenching the teeth. I'm not going to give in to these thoughts. I'm not going to do it. No. And sometimes that's what's really needed. Many years ago, there was a Shinzen Young, who's a great Vipassana teacher, Buddhist teacher, meditation teacher. He was giving a Dharma talk that I was listening to. And he said, oh, this was interesting. I hadn't made the connection. He was giving a Dharma talk. He was a guest teacher to a retreat I was teaching. It was a retreat for experienced practitioners. So that was the context for what he was going to say, long-time meditators. And he said, sometimes a successful meditation is that you didn't get up until the bell rang. Sometimes sitting on the cushion is like being on the rodeo with the thoughts, the restlessness, and all that. And the fact that you were restless is not proof that meditation didn't work. Successful meditation means you didn't get off the bronco. So that was kind of nice. Sometimes that's very realistic. We have a whole range of life circumstances, or a whole range of how the mind is and the energy of the mind and the emotions and all that. Sometimes we can sit blissfully maybe and calmly, and sometimes that's not possible. But we can at least not get off the seat. So five ways of dealing with rumination, with thinking. And then I want to end with one point, and that is one of the most useful things you can do in relationship to thinking is to rely, take refuge in, fall back on your capacity to be aware, your capacity to be mindful, and to know what's happening as it's happening. To know, I'm thinking. That's what's happening. I'm thinking furiously. I'm thinking with a lot of attachment and force. And then keep relying on the, take refuge in the attention. Keep falling back into the attention. Stay with it. Because every time you come into the attentive mode, you're not feeding the thoughts. You're not lost in the thoughts. The thoughts don't have control over you. And you might have to keep doing it. But it's a powerful thing. And you develop a muscle if you do that, the muscle of self-reliance, the muscle of independence, the muscle of a certain degree of self-control, if you can keep coming back into paying attention to what's there rather than giving into what's there. So, for those of you who think, I hope that this was useful to hear all this, and I hope that it can. I hope in some ways it was served as a mirror for you to reflect on yourself and explore yourself, understand a little bit about maybe how your own mind works and your relationship to thoughts, and piqued your interest to pay more attention, learn more about the ecology of your thinking. We have about 5 minutes. If anyone has a question about this. Anybody's been thinking about things, about the talk, you're welcome to ask.
Thank you for the talk today. It was very useful for me personally. One of the things, I'm going through a personal health issue, and sometimes it creates a lot of anxiety because of the uncertainty I have to deal with. I found that I freeze, which means that I don't want to pay attention to what's going on. And sometimes it takes me 2 or 3 days of that freeze, and then slowly one day I wake up and I feel better and I'm able to go back to meditation or take care of things. But when I'm going through that thing, when it strikes, I don't even want to meditate. I cannot address it. So how do you deal with the freezing of your mind?
I think that it's important to have respect for yourself and your response and your reactions, and not to see freeze as necessarily bad. Maybe you're not ready to face what's going on, and so you need time to digest it, to process it, to kind of be ready for it, to do something. So I be careful you don't think it's bad to freeze. And it's always good to have compassion for yourself. And maybe the freezing part of you, the best thing you can do is to have compassion for it. So when it occurs, can you kind of relate to it in a kind way, in a compassionate way, in a caring way? And then rather than overcoming it, you might bring attention to the freeze. Be curious about it. Maybe that part of you that freezes needs your care, also needs your attention, needs to be seen, needs to be helped to feel safe. Okay, it's okay to freeze, but I'll be with you. And you keep recognizing the freeze. Oh, I'm freezing. Oh, this is freezing. And then where in your body does that freezing happen? Just what are the physical symptoms of that situation? And then bring kind attention to that. Oh, this is what it feels like. I feel kind of numb in this part of my body, and then feel the numb. Don't be in a hurry to overcome it, but just keep meeting it and being with it. And chances are, if you do that, something will begin to thaw. And as it thaws, you'll probably be ready to step. As it thaws, then the wisdom of the processing or the digesting or what needs to happen inside has a chance to work a little bit more effectively. And then at some point, so rather than freezing for 3 days, maybe you freeze for 1 day, and then you're ready to step and do what needs to be done.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, that's 9 o'clock. So thank you all, and I think you do a great service to yourself and to others if you become wiser about your thinking. Thank you.